Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm your host, Kay Potok, and the program today is in two main parts. First, we concentrate on the issue of immigration from a local standpoint. In complete contrast, the second half is about local opportunities to be creative, and I'll be talking with representatives of two organizations in our local area, both of which can help to get your own creative juices flowing. And in the second half today, you'll also be hearing about how to combine creativity with a midwinter weekend getaway. So stay tuned for that. But first, I'll be talking with Rick Exner, who's the communications coordinator for the Immigration Committee or Task Force of AMOS, which stands for a Mid-Iowa Organizing Strategy. AMOS members are not individuals, but organizations, primarily, but not entirely, religious organizations, here in Ames and also in Des Moines. The member organizations come together to organize for social change in many different areas, and today we'll be concentrating on AMOS's work in the area of immigration. In the interests of full disclosure, I should mention the church I attend is a member of AMOS, so that I've been aware of many AMOS initiatives over the past several years, and I've worked on some of them. But now let me introduce my first guest, Rick Exner. He doesn't like me to say he's an expert. He's an expert in my mind, but he has become something of an expert because of the work he's been doing locally around immigration issues. So welcome, Rick, and I'm so glad you can come in to talk to us about immigration and perhaps a little bit about refugees.
Yes, happy to be here.
Thank you. Now, do you think refugees and immigrants are sort of lumped together in people's minds a bit?
Yes, although the State Department makes it clear that there's completely different processes for immigrants coming into the country versus refugees coming into the country. But the demographics are sometimes similar between immigrants and refugees, and some of their problems once they get into the country are similar.
Right.
And the way that we perceive them is pretty much all kind of lumped together, I think, that the current refugee crisis is seen as just more of the same. If you view immigration as a problem, you probably feel the same way about the refugees.
Right. Now, you say the processes are completely different. Could you say a bit more about that, the processes for them being admitted, are completely different for immigrants and refugees?
You know, there's longstanding immigration legislation that establishes quotas, country quotas, and there's a certain degree of allowance given for family members living in the U.S. and things like that. There's even a citizenship lottery that for very few people allows them to, quote, jump the line. But that's all immigration. Refugee is something completely different. You get defined as a refugee if your life is in danger for political or social or other reasons like that that are documented, or if you're part of a group that is considered also similarly under threat, such as being a Cuban, special set of rules for people from certain countries. Again, a certain allowance given for instance, spouses of U.S. citizens, things like that. But basically, you need to be threatened to get refugee status. And I should also say there's a certain refugee status available to people who are in this country on an undocumented basis, such as the U visa, which is for cases of documented familial abuse, sexual abuse, things like that.
Oh,
but
okay.
Generally, it's for people outside of the country getting into the country.
Is it easy for refugees to get into the country? Easier than it is for immigrants?
I don't know how it is for all countries, but Canada, for instance, has a process of vetting potential refugees, which is averages 4 months. The United States averages 12 to 24 months. And
vetting refugees
in terms of determining their identity, determining their degree of danger or why they Why would they be justifying the petition for refugee status? Were they really threatened for their political stance, or were they really definitely who they are down to the fingerprint level and what their background is, who they know, what their associations were? I think the U.S. vetting process is pretty detailed. And a few years ago, we heard some cases about people who had worked with our armed forces in Iraq and Afghanistan as translators, risking their lives to do so, and then were asking for refugee status in the U.S. because they were in danger in their own communities because of their work with the United States or the U.S. troops. And those people were waiting sometimes years and years and years, and sometimes were being killed while they were waiting. There were some cases of that on the radio that we heard. So,
well, that was going to be one of my questions. Where are they waiting if these people are in danger and it takes 24 months for them to be vetted? Are they out of danger while they're waiting? And the answer is obviously often not.
Often not, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so you're saying that the vetting process for refugees is very stringent indeed, more so than for immigrants, would you say?
Yes, I think that's true. With an immigrant petition, it's more about the information that the supplicant provides. With refugee, they go and do a thorough investigation of your background and your history, going to third parties, going to the security agencies of other governments, et cetera. So it's a pretty darn detailed screening, and I read in some of the recent materials that there's going to be an additional screen for Syrian refugees. So in the case, I'll throw this statistic in. The statistic is that of the more than 750,000 refugees who've entered the United States since 9/11, more than 750,000 of them, three individuals have been arrested on terrorism-related charges.
Alleged terrorism. I mean, they've been arrested, but they haven't actually, as far as we know, been actually. So
I don't know that.
It's a very small percentage anyway. Yeah.
Even if they were carrying out terrorist activities, three out of more than 750,000 is a fairly small proportion.
Right, right. You don't claim to be particularly expert in the Syrian refugee situation, but...
No, we're all learning.
We are. But have you got any thoughts on that?
You know, the U.S. was accepting many times more refugees than they are now after the Vietnam War and then again about 15 years ago. And our communities are now really enriched by the Hmong and the other people that entered our country at that time and began planting gardens and showing up selling flowers at our farmers markets and just becoming a really valued part of our community. So no reason that we can't look forward to more of that.
Yeah, and it strikes me that the Syrian refugees, they are fleeing from ISIS. So in a sense, they're the best publicity against ISIS that you could have.
And how in character for what we believe that we are as a country.
Right, yes.
To be giving people an opportunity to be demonstrating that this is an open society, a welcoming society.
Right.
To be living that, yes.
Right. Okay, but mostly, and this is one of Amos's slogans, they would like to work on local issues, local achievable issues, and that's what you've been concentrating on, working on immigrant issues in this area. Why don't you tell us about the issues you've been working on locally? You've been doing some work with law enforcement, I believe.
Well, yes. A number of county sheriffs and chiefs of police in the state are behind an initiative to extend driver's permits to adult individuals who do not have documentation. Well, why would law enforcement be behind something like that? Maybe because it would make their job so much easier. It would reduce the flight risk. It would bring a lot more people into the DOT database. Maybe for the rest of us, it would be an attractive idea because it would make our insurance cheaper, because the statistics show that people who are unlicensed are in a lot more accidents, in a lot more fatal accidents, and more likely to flee the scene of an accident. And then, of course, for the community that is trying to provide for its children by working, getting to a job is kind of hard when you can't get there on wheels or
school
you,
or whatever.
Yes. So the immigrant community is solidly behind this initiative.
So we're talking now about undocumented immigrants who at the moment can't get driver's license. So basically a lot of them are driving without licenses.
In Iowa, a lot of them are taking their life in their hands and turning the key every morning to get to work.
And the police want these people, although they might be undocumented, they want them to be able to have driver's licenses.
And in 11 states and the District of Columbia, they can.
Uh-huh.
So Iowa wouldn't be the first state to move in this direction. We had some legislation last year in the Iowa legislature. It did not get out of committee. You would think our legislators are very aware of this initiative by now, but I've gotten a lot of blank stares when I've brought it up here in Story County. And one way we're going to try to get the issue on the table with more of our legislators is to have a caucus resolution. So whether you're going to your Republican caucus or your Democratic caucus February 1, we'd like you to say something to introduce an initiative for this driver's license for undocumented in Iowa. We'll have something, we'll have some text printed up with basically in the format of we believe, we acknowledge, that the kind of thing that you can comfortably take to your caucus with a little bit of background information. Basically, you would think this would be a win-win, but only if it gets on the radar. And if your legislator comes to your caucus and looks like a deer in the headlights, please make them aware of this issue, because this is something that is, as we say, actionable. Right here in Iowa, nobody's going to do it for us, and it would carry all kinds of benefits beyond the law enforcement benefits. This driving situation leads to the breakup of families, because in some parts of Iowa, still being brought in and booked as a result of a traffic violation, even driving without a license, can put you in the hands of the government agency that's set up to deport you. And so you really never know whether when you get stopped, and there was just an issue a couple of weeks ago in the Tama area where it seemed there was a lot of fear in the situation. It was a traffic stop, and the woman had left her license at home. There was a lot of fear. And
But she did have a license.
Yes, this woman did. She was a citizen. But she is part of a community that feels under threat. She looked identifiably Latino. She looked like somebody that if an officer wanted to harass somebody for that reason, they could have focused in on that. Well, the driver's license initiative, if passed into law in Iowa, would take that threat away. If you're in violation, you're in violation, but it would be on the same basis as any other driver. A lot of it comes back to what concrete things can we do here in Iowa. There are a lot of long-term concrete things, but here's something that we could do, you know, next year.
What would you say to people who say, well, these people are here illegally, they don't deserve licenses?
It's not a question of deserve. I'm sure there are a lot of people who feel that way. But whether you are willing to pay another probably more than $100 a year in your insurance, because that was an estimate of the additional cost due to unlicensed drivers, whether you're willing to take your chances on highways that are more risky and less protected, whether you're willing to leave your own law enforcement personnel at more of a disadvantage in terms of what they know about the people who are out there on the roads. I think you have to be pretty hardcore to be willing to make all those sacrifices just so that someone who you think shouldn't be here can't drive while they're here.
Right. And that's something I think we need to emphasize, is this is something that law enforcement is in favor of.
Increasingly, yeah. Just parenthetically, these are not licenses that you can use to apply for any government services, to board an airplane. They're specifically for driving, nothing else.
Okay, so that's one thing that you've been working on. And you've also been working, I believe, on building relationships in general with the police and with immigrant communities.
We're fortunate in Story County to have Paul Fitzgerald as a sheriff. And Paul has gotten behind this license initiative some time ago. Similarly, Chief Popper in Marshalltown, Chief of Police. For all the same reasons I think that I articulated, that they see that this would make their job easier, would make them more effective, and also would begin to work on the relationship between the immigrant communities and law enforcement, which is not good now, I'll have to say. These situations arise. For instance, I volunteer with an English second language program, and one of the ladies who comes in there has been stopped 6 times in her community. She wasn't even driving.
So she was walking around.
Her perception is that this is harassment. Now, you know, maybe I would agree with her, maybe I wouldn't. But when these situations arise, if there's not a matrix of trust between the community and the law enforcement, then the worst interpretations are put on every situation.
Yeah, on both sides. Yes. So if they get to know one another better and trust one another.
Yeah. Yes. And that's a long-term job. In some of our smaller communities, I'm not talking Marshalltown, but some of our smaller communities, there really are not institutions, immigrant institutions, not even a soccer league, you know. Mm-hmm. And so who speaks for that community? Mm-hmm. And so this is a long-term project.
So you mentioned soccer. Are there certain areas that people are trying to work in to help build these kind of relationships?
I think a lot of us are just doing what we can around the edges. Leadership development. If you're working in a community agency or a business or something, think about the education of Iowans, the next generation of Iowans who are getting their experience and their education through you. And let's be thinking all the time about how we build our civil society here.
Okay, and I think that leads very nicely as a nice sort of segue into the last sort of area that you've been working on, just started on, and that is the resources at local libraries that would help immigrants.
Yeah, I have to say we're in early stages of this. I guess we got thinking about this about 6 months ago when the New York City Public Library put out a press release about its new quote-unquote immigrant corner, which is basically to establish a welcoming presence for immigrants and non-English speakers in particular, and also to provide them at least the resources that they're most likely to need. And we have a good example at the Marshalltown Public Library doing that, and a lot of what they focus on, and there's right on their homepage is in Espanol, so you can click on that tab. They don't reproduce their whole website in Spanish, but it leads to particular resources that you might need as an immigrant. So we're going to be working with Lynn Carey at the Ames Public Library to see what we can do here about working on the welcoming presence, working on developing resources and making them accessible. Once we have some of these things, such as early childhood education, for instance, in Spanish, where can we go with a bookmobile to get that information in good hands? And we have some ideas about what could be done. We just have all kinds of ideas.
Okay. So bookmobile and early reading texts in Spanish and so on. How about, well, I recently got back from, when I say Europe, but I was mostly in England, actually, or the Celtic fringes, Wales, Scotland. But you go into a public library in almost any city and you see signs in different languages guiding people to areas within the library where they can get help with applying for jobs, you know, the kinds of things that any new person in a community or in new entrant into this country or this community could use. Employment mm-hmm. help, mm-hmm. job seeking help, mm-hmm. that right within the library. And signs, as soon as they walk in the door, signs pointing them to where they can go within the library to find this kind of help.
Yeah, you go to our big box hardware store in Ames and you'll see the same kind of signage.
So that's something we can certainly offer in libraries.
Yes.
I mean, where are people meant to go to when they're starting out and they don't speak the language? Mm-hmm. The library is an obvious place.
What would bring them in the door, and then what do they see as soon as they get in the door?
Right. Actually, I remember when I was still teaching, one of the things I discovered was very useful to people. I had, when I taught composition, which was in the early days of my career, I had a lot of immigrant students from places like Vietnam who'd had quite an adventure getting here in the first place, and they'd write about their experiences getting here. And those documents that they'd written when they were edited and, you know, turned into good English and so on, they were incredibly valuable for local English language teaching, because this was something that the people that were trying to learn English could relate to.
Mm-hmm. Other learners.
Right.
Yeah.
So this was a very valuable resource. I mean, they weren't obviously written by professional writers, but they were very, people really enjoyed reading them. And, of course, the students enjoyed contributing them when they realized what was going to happen.
Right, right.
Yeah, so there's lots that can be done. Mm-hmm. Gives people a chance to tell their stories and other people to hear them. It's very useful for on both sides.
Yeah, can't agree more.
Okay. Now, you are in charge, or you coordinate a website, or an email list, I should say, for people that are interested in these issues and that might have ideas that would be helpful. And if people want to get on that email list, we should probably give them the information now.
Yeah. What goes out is my digest of, I get some information from the Mexican government, Department of Exterior Relations. I get some information from our network in Iowa in terms of what groups are doing and what the issues are. Sometimes one of you, like Neil Flora, will send me an article with a sociological bent. Try not to overwhelm people, but between one and four transmissions a week, I guess, is about what we do. And if you're interested in being on that list, send me some email. My address is rickexner2@yahoo.com.
And the Exner is E-X-N-E-R, I should. So it's
That's right. rickexner2@gmail.com.
Okay. And we will put this up on our website.
That'd be great.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Rick.
Thanks for
that. As I said, Rick Exner is the communications coordinator for the Immigration Committee of AMOS. That's it, a Mid-Iowa organizing strategy. Thank you again, Rick.
You bet.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and I'm your host, Kay Puttock. We've been talking about local immigration issues. And in the interview we've just heard, Rick Exner mentioned that here in Story County, we're lucky to have Paul Fitzgerald as the sheriff. Rick pointed out that County Sheriff Fitzgerald has been behind the driver's license initiative that Amos is working on at present. And so I thought I'd play a very brief clip from an interview I had with Sheriff Fitzgerald several years ago. It's part of a much longer interview about early cooperation between the sheriff's office and Amos, and it gives us another glimpse of the ongoing three-way relationships among the immigrant community, Amos, and law enforcement. Well, I'm here with the Story County Sheriff, Paul Fitzgerald, who's very graciously agreed to come and talk to us about his relations with Amos and how his contact with them over the years, which started, I guess, at the end of 2012.
That is correct.
Would you like to tell us about that?
Well, Mary Richards, who was former county attorney in Story County that I worked with my first few years as Story County Sheriff, is a member of that group. And last year, the end of last year, I was contacted by Amos and wanted to come over and talk with me regarding the sheriff's office and how immigration impacts us at the sheriff's office. So having beginning that dialogue with Amos, at the same time last year, I was also representing the National Sheriff's Association with a group called the Chicago Council on Immigration Reform. We had gone into Chicago on various times for meetings. Actually, one of the vice chairs of this was former Iowa Governor Chet Culver.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had met on a number of occasions with the entire council from various people from the Midwest, from political people to professors to a host of people around Iowa, Minnesota, South Dakota, Michigan, some of these areas around Chicago. So we were working on a paper to present to the White House, which I believe is presented to the White House within the last couple of months. And when we were working with Amos, I would forward progress that the Chicago Council was doing onto Mary and the Amos group, and we continued our dialogue from there.
Oh, I see. I understand that one of the concerns that Amos had when they saw that document was that there was an identification of undocumented people with criminals, and they tried to make that distinction in the language of the document that went to the White House. Mm-hmm. And so that was one of the contributions that they made, I think.
Well, when they would look over the work that we began doing at the Chicago Council, I was kind of like the pass-through or the vehicle uh-huh. that they would use. So when they would have some concerns in the paper we were working on, Amos here in Iowa would get that to me, mm-hmm. and then I would be able to share that with a group back in Chicago, the Chicago Council, mm-hmm. and then they would consider their concerns and interject how that would modify the document that they were working on as they working to prepare a final draft document mm-hmm. for the White House.
Mm-hmm. So it's possible that the Amos group here had an impact on a document that went to the White House.
It's very possible.
That was Story County Sheriff Paul Fitzgerald, and this is Local Talk. I'm your host, Kay Patek. In the second half of our show, we'll have a complete change of pace, so stay with us. We'll be back to talk about local opportunities to nurture your creativity after this short music break.
Oh, the time will come up when the winds will stop and the breeze will cease to be breathing like the stillness in the wind before the hurricane begins, the hour that the ship comes in. And the sea will split and the ships will hit, and the sands on the shoreline will be shaking, and the tide will sound and the waves will pound, and the morning will be a breaking.
In the second half of Local Talk, we have two interviews about area organizations that provide opportunities for expanding and developing your creativity. So let's go ahead with the first interview about that. My guest today is Claire Williams, who's the publisher at CASA, that's the Creative Artist Studios of Ames. Early in the month, I interviewed Leanne Wilson, who's one of the founders of CASA. But Claire is more of a newcomer at CASA, so she's got a different perspective on it. Welcome to Local Talk, Claire.
Thank you for having me, Kay. We're really excited to be here.
So, as I said, you're a newcomer at CASA. What brought you to the Creative Artist Studios?
Sure. So when I was finishing up grad school at the University of Northern Iowa, I had started doing pottery as a stress relief, which is nice because you need that. And I graduated and everything was great, and I moved to Des Moines, and I didn't do pottery. I couldn't find a studio. And for about a year and a half, it just went dormant. And I had taken a job here in Ames and found out about CASA through the Workspace, which is it's a student studio in the basement of the Union at mm-hmm. Iowa State. I was at the Workspace, and I found out about CASA. And shortly thereafter, I became a member, and I officially became a member May 1st. And it really reinvigorated the passion that I have for clay and for community space, and to look up and learn from all the other community members there.
Mm-hmm. Well, could you describe what the atmosphere at CASA is like that you find so nurturing?
The atmosphere at CASA is one that cultivates artist creativity, and that's 2D, that's painting, that's clay, that's any type of art that you do, it's promoted at CASA. And the beauty of that is that there are members there that were founding members. And so there's a history at CASA. And when you come into it and you begin working there, you find very quickly that the members there, all of them, want you to succeed as an artist and want you to try different things as an artist and want you to grow as an artist. It doesn't matter if you had training or if it's just a hobby that you do, kind of what I do right now. But there's a very strong sense of community, and for an organization to have that and have the history that CASA does, it's just a fantastic environment to be in, especially as somebody that does clay as a hobby. And I would encourage anybody that has a passion for art, whether it's 2D or clay, to consider looking into this organization
Now, 2D, did you say?
Yeah.
What is that?
Yeah, so that would be painting, I think sculpting, in that way jewelry, kind of other things opposite of clay, just multimedia in general.
Well,
we have several different artists.
I can see why painting is 2D, but I can't see why sculpture is, that seems 3D to me.
I can't honestly tell you what 2D stands for because I'm in clay, but what I can tell you is that it's painting and mixed media is what I've heard it referred to as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, two dimensions, I suppose it means, but I can't see why sculpture is not three-dimensional.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you're a potter. That means you – what kind of work do you do?
So I primarily focus on mugs. I really like making mugs, and I do wheel-thrown pottery.
Mm-hmm.
I've attempted to do a couple hand-building projects, but they haven't been as successful. So I enjoy working on the wheel, and – several of the other potters there do as well, and I've learned a lot just in my short couple months being there. The tips that all the other artists provide really, really help you grow and to learn from what they've already experienced in their career as a potter.
So on a typical day when you go into work in the studios, how many other people might be there?
Well, it somewhat depends. I think it depends on the day. Typically during the week, at least a handful of people are there, 2D and clay. On the weekends, it might be a little less just because people have other things going on. But the nice thing is that we have a key. As a member, you have a key, and we can go in at any time. And because of my current work, my hours are a little different than I would say a normal 9-to-5. So the nice thing is that I have a key to be able to go in there and still work when it works for me. And we all do, which is great.
Now, you mentioned your work. I believe you work at a brewing company.
I do. I'm a manager at Court Avenue Restaurant and Brewing Company downtown Des Moines. And I just started that the middle of June. So I've been working there for a couple months. And it's, of course, taken away from my time at CASA.
Sure.
But the time that I do get there, I use to the fullest extent. And that's what one of the things I love about the publisher position is that even though I'm not in the studio as much as I was in May when I started, I have the ability to communicate and to promote CASA even though I'm not there as much as I was.
Mm-hmm. What would you say to someone who's maybe just starting out getting an interest in, say, painting or pottery, and they wonder if, you know, if this would be the place, and perhaps they think they're too amateurish and everyone out there is very good? What would you say to them?
I would say that one of the best things you can do as an amateur or a person just starting out in the art world is to surround yourself with people who have a similar passion. And that goes for anything you want to experience and pursue in life. But particularly in the arts, when you surround yourself with people who have the same passion for the arts and care about your growth as an artist, that's the best thing you can do. And we have that at CASA. You join as somebody that's maybe never thrown even, and we will surround you with support and cultivate that in you as an artist, and then you grow at your own pace.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, we have people at the studio who have been, this is their career. They've been doing it for 30, 40 years,
mm-hmm.
and they have so much built up knowledge and experience about the craft that they impart on the new people that come into the studio. So if you have any inclination to pursue art, more so than just a hobby or more so than just maybe a weekend thing you do, I would highly encourage you to check out CASA. And to top that off, if you're new and on top of that you would like a personal space somewhere for you to grow in that way, we also have several studio spaces available right now.
And if you're something like a potter, there's a lot of expensive equipment involved, you know, especially the kiln and so on, and that's available there.
Absolutely. We have a whole room full of kilns, and we have a whole room full of wheels as well. The beautiful thing about CASA is when you become a member, all of those items, including the kiln, are open to you and at your, you know, use at any time.
Now, the wheels, are they electric or are they kick wheels or both?
They're all electric, yeah. Uh-huh. I mean, you get great leg workout doing the kick wheel, but yep, they're all electric. And the nice thing, what I found to be wonderful and a great learning opportunity as well, is you basically, you purchase your clay and then you create whatever you'd like to create. And then you set your own firing schedule based upon the rest of the community and where they are. If, you know, if there's a kiln available, then you sign up for it. If they're taken, then you wait a week. But that becomes your responsibility to get those things fired, to get them glazed, to get the glaze fire going. And the nice thing is that everybody at the studio has used and fired these kilns. So if you are an amateur or you're a new person who's never fired a kiln, you come in, you make some things, and we walk you through it. Mm-hmm. We show you how to fire it. We show you how each one fires because we have different kilns. And you learn very quickly how to do those things. And that's something that you can't find in some other community studios. Sometimes they fire for you. So this is an opportunity not only to work on your personal art, but to learn how to fire a kiln. Mm-hmm. And to learn all the steps that go into a final piece of pottery, in terms of pottery. So it's a wonderful opportunity to learn from step one to the final step, that entire process, and do it hands-on.
Mm-hmm. Now, you were talking about firing kilns, mm-hmm. but I believe mixing glazes, that's quite an art, too. And there's a lot of experience involved in that, too.
Yep. Yeah. And Greg Lamont, actually, when I very first started at CASA, he showed myself and another CASA member how to mix a glaze. And it's kind of like cooking. You have a recipe. So you've got the different powders and the different things that you need to put into this, a certain amount of water to add to make it a certain texture and consistency. So he showed this CASA member and I step-by-step how to make a 5-gallon bucket of glaze. And the beauty is that 5-gallon bucket is open for the entire community. So you make this particular glaze, it might last you 6 months, and everybody in the studio can use it. So not only do you have hands-on opportunities for mixing glaze, to clean a kiln, to use kiln shelf and set up a kiln yourself, but you have the opportunity to share in what you're doing with the rest of the community. And that's why we have such a wonderful community effort to make this thing successful. And after 15 years, it's still going.
Mm-hmm. So it's a cooperative learning opportunity and support and
absolutely
cheering gallery.
It is. It is. And it's one of those wonderful community studios where if you mess up a firing, if the glaze doesn't come out right and you have a 5-gallon bucket of glaze you can't use, everybody understands because mm-hmm. it's a learning opportunity. They don't expect you to be perfect. And what you do is you figure out what went wrong and you figure it out and then you move on and you don't do it again. And everybody is completely understanding because everybody's been there. Mm-hmm. Everybody's messed up glaze. Everybody's messed up a firing. So to have that support as well has been very, very nice.
Well, this sounds like a wonderful opportunity for people that are experienced artists or just starting out or feeling their way or whatever. It sounds like a wonderful opportunity. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. I've been talking to Claire Williams, who's the publisher for CASA. That's the Creative Artists Studios in Ames. Why don't you just tell people before we go where you are?
You can find CASA at 130 South Sheldon Avenue in Ames. It's right off Lincoln Way. It's actually the basement of a renovated church. So you'll come up on it and you'll see that it's a church, but it's actually the basement. So it's free parking there. You just park and you can walk right on down. To learn a little bit more about CASA online, visit the www.creativeartists.org. You can also follow us on Facebook at CASA in all caps, and that's the Creative Artist Studio of Ames.
Thank you very much, Claire Williams.
Thank you.
This is Local Talk on KHI Community Radio, and I'm Kay Patrick, your host for today. In our final interview, you'll be hearing how you can combine personal creativity with a winter weekend getaway. My guest is Maureen Siemens of Legacy Learning, Boone River Valley. And she's here to tell us about the winter weekend retreat coming up in January. Well, it's a pleasure to have you back to talk to us, Maureen, about what's coming up at Legacy Learning. So why don't you tell us about your winter weekend that's coming up?
We are excited about the January retreat that we'll be offering the 23rd and 24th, which is Saturday and Sunday. We'll offer four workshops in 2 days, and there will be four different instructors that lead the workshops. It's really kind of when we hit the doldrums, that late January time. Mm-hmm. We've been blessed this fall with a leisurely autumn, but we know that it's coming. And so it's nice to plan ahead, and after the excitement of the holidays, then have something to look forward to. We have four wonderful workshops, and we're just excited about telling you about them.
Well, first of all, maybe we should backtrack a bit and talk about the idea behind legacy learning, because people might not have happened to hear before when you were on Local Talk talking about legacy learning. So why don't you give them a bit of background first?
Legacy Learning is a new nonprofit in the Webster City area. It's Legacy Learning Boone River Valley, which means that it's really a regional identity. And our mission is to use arts in the environment in a way that celebrates the natural resources of our area.
And this weekend that you're having, this is typical of the kind of workshops you do. They're not just, people don't come like to one, a couple of hours once a week. They come for a few days.
Correct. Our goal is to bring people into the community and be able to experience the entire area. One of the things with our busy lives in today's society is that there's kind of a need to unwind and get away. So we want to actually offer what we call a staycation. We do offer some day-long workshops as well, and they're dispersed throughout the year. But our focus is really on creating an experience where people truly can get away, at least for a night.
And maybe you should talk a bit about where they stay when they're, for example, if they come to the winter weekend.
We encourage people, we teach throughout the community. We teach in the Briggs Woods Park, which is on the south edge of Webster City, in a beautiful natural environment. We have several structures there that we can hold workshops in. We've taught in the pottery and the landscape businesses in town. We teach at the community college, and we teach some of our technical workshops at the high school. So we utilize the community resources, but we encourage people to stay in the motels and even in the parks. The parks has a cabin initiative where they're using native logs to build log cabins that imitate the traditional log cabins that are in our historical park, but they are from our local timber, and that's wood that's cut and processed here in Iowa.
Oh, are these primitive cabins or?
They are not. They are actually quite the opposite of primitive. They are beautiful and traditional in aesthetic, but they are fully serviced cabins. Oh. They have dishwashers and appliances. And our newest cabin, which is under construction now, is actually going to be a partnership with Legacy Learning. And the cabin will be constructed with teaching space. So it's a very versatile, convertible space where we can have gatherings that allow for table space, sewing machines, extra lighting, extra electricity, that kind of thing. And also for small, even training gatherings. But the place, the bedrooms convert, and it's a very large open space right there on the lake in the woods. Beautiful setting.
And people, when people call up to register for the workshop, they can register to stay in one of the cabins at the same time.
They can. They can go on My County Parks to register for the cabins. And the Legacy Learning workshops are actually on a separate workshop or a separate website, but that is Legacy Learning BRV, which stands for BooneRiverValley.org.
Okay. And the other one again?
My County Parks.
My County.
And people may be familiar with that because it registers all the parks in Iowa.
Okay. Well, that sounds very attractive, as you say, when you're in the doldrums after the holidays and so on. So why don't you tell us about the different workshops that you've got at the retreat?
First of all, we have a quilting workshop, and it will be taught at the local community college, Iowa Central. And there's good teaching space. There's table space. People will be asked to bring sewing machines and quilting panels. The class will focus on creating a quilt from using quilting panels. Some of you may be familiar with quilting panels from happening by the beautiful quilt shops in our area and seeing that there's a beautiful panel. You don't exactly know what to do with it. This workshop will take the panel that you bring along and show you all kinds of ways to integrate it into a beautiful finished quilt. The class is actually taught by a woman who has moved to our area from Tennessee after a career as a chemist. And so she has taken up quilting as an avocation and has fallen in love with the materials and also the land of our area. So she loves to combine that, and she'll be very sharing and welcoming to anyone even beginning to quilt.
Okay. And you say people have to bring their own sewing machines for that.
We have some available, but in general, quilters want to do that. There are options, and if you call ahead, we can probably work something out. But in general, they know to do that. And the list would be on the website. Anything that you need to bring to any of our workshops is listed on the website if you're asked to bring materials or equipment.
Okay. So quilting.
As along with quilting, we will have wood carving. Wood carving will be taught by a wonderful artist named Chad Eels, and he has himself done the beautiful carved signs that identify all of our wild areas in the county, the marshes, etc. And so he has made a hand-carved sign for each of our special set-aside areas, and he is going to use this workshop to teach basic carving techniques, and they will start creating an heirloom spoon, which helps them get acquainted with all of the different gouge techniques, and a project that's doable in 2 days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know Chad. Have you ever seen his house?
Yes, the dome.
Yes, it's incredible.
It's
based on a geodesic dome, but he's added all sorts of
correct.
Stuff to it. And
correct.
Right up in the top of the dome is where he keeps his lumber.
Correct. It's beautiful.
It's right to call
it's beautiful.
Lumber. Yeah, it's an incredible place.
And he and Jean are very committed in a lifelong quest for environmental
right.
issues. Jean has spent her career in environmental studies. She's one of our board members.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they've got, what's it called, geothermal heating in their house
yes.
and all
yes.
sorts of things.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, so that should be very fascinating. Now, would that be suitable for someone that's done no carving at all?
It would be. It would be.
Uh-huh.
He's very welcoming as an instructor and very practical. And, you know, with carving, you have to build up hand strength. And so if you start with a workshop that has a project that's too big or too detailed, it becomes very frustrating because you really have to be able to carve for many hours on those. This allows you to get all of the techniques and really have an heirloom at the end of it, but you'll be able to work within the hand strength that you may not have developed yet.
Okay. So we got quilting, carving, and
there is a welding class, and the welding class is called Reflections of Nature. It will be taught by an artist named Doug Abbott, who is an artist theologian who lives in Minneapolis. And he is really interested in the way the environment fosters a search for spirituality. In his work and in his art, he combines that quest. He grew up in the woods in this area, and he spent his childhood wandering along the river valleys and through the timbers, and he has a great appreciation for the Iowa landscape, and he uses that in his work. And they will work at the high school welding facility here in Webster City, and they will accomplish a small sculpture within the two-day period. So they will have basic welding techniques, actual hands-on welding, and then they will also have the ability to really create a small sculpture in those 2 days.
Would this be a kind of sculpture that's like an ornament in the house? Or
probably, well, it could be in the house. More likely, he's going to approach it from a garden sculpture standpoint.
Do you happen to know what kind of metal they're using?
I think he'll use a variety of metal, steel and stainless steel, probably some copper.
Okay. Well, those all sound fascinating. And what does the countryside around you look like at that time of the year?
Well, hopefully it will be covered with snow.
Now, Boone River, you say Boone River Valley. I don't really know it terribly well. So
okay. Well, if you go up on Highway 17 and head south to Webster City, as you come into the city, you'll cross the Briggswoods Golf Course. It's an 18-hole golf course with holes on either side of the road. It's very beautiful. And just east of that, you'll find the park, and which is a beautiful resource that was given to the county at the turn of the century.
And is this where the cabins are?
That is where the cabins are. And then there's a lake there. Briggswoods Lake is there, and the cabins overlook the lake. There are also primitive cabins available at Briggswoods. They're beautiful, but they do not have indoor plumbing. But other than that, they do have beautiful bunk beds. They're little log cabins. They're actually very lovely if you want primitive doesn't quite describe it, but it is basic.
Mm-hmm.
And then they also have many improved campsites available. And that's a very popular camping ground.
Uh-huh.
It's very often filled in the summer months or the fall months. And very well directed, and there's always a camp director there. So it's a nice campground that people like to return to. Then if you continue, you'll cross the Boone River. And that's a river that's known for its canoeing and kayaking, and its fall is considerable. So it's a popular river through time. And because it had a good fall, it was known for its mills. So we no longer have the mills, but we have them marked as historic sites. It's identified as an Iowa River Trail.
Uh-huh.
So it's actually quite a lovely river for water sports. Then a couple miles more, you come into the community. There's some motels that people are encouraged to stay in. They are very welcoming and well-run. And then if you continue into the town, you'll come to the Twin Parks that are park on either side. We have sculpture in the West Twin Park, and Arts Alive sponsor a yearly sculpture project where they bring artists to the park. And so that's kind of a fun community adventure. And then you come to the pottery, where we haven't talked about the painting class, but at the Produce Station Pottery there in the center of the town, the fourth class will be taught, the workshop by Diane Kunzler. She will be teaching an oil and acrylic painting workshop. And she will focus on creating realism and using nature as the foil. She is known for these beautiful portraits of the still life of the environment. You may be looking straight down into the riverbed and seeing the swirl of the current and the leaves fallen to the bottom, resting on stones. Beautiful, lyrical, close-up views of nature. But she's a very patient and understanding teacher. She taught for many years at Jefferson High School, and now she lives in Des Moines.
Well, this sounds lovely. They'd arrive January the 22nd, would they? And then the workshops start on January the 22nd?
They could. They start at 8:30 or 9 in the morning.
Or they could just arrive early in the morning. Yeah.
They could, but certainly they'd be welcome to stay overnight. And that's depends on if you really do commit to making this leisurely,
right,
which we do certainly encourage. It's such a fulfilling and restorative experience if you just allow yourself once in a while to be away and focus on something that you're actually going to learn.
Okay. So this is will be a lovely getaway for that weekend, January the 23rd and 24th. And the contact information is Legacy Learning BRV. BRV stands for Boone River Valley. Legacy Learning BRV, that's all one word, .org. That's the website. And we've got two phone numbers here. One at the Briggswood office, 515-832-9570. I'll repeat that, 515-832-9570. Or you could call Maureen herself. The office might be a little bit hectic after the holidays and so on. But Maureen's pretty reliable, and she usually answers, I've found. And her number is 515-835-0497. 835-0497. Well, thank you again, Maureen Siemens, for telling us about Legacy Learning and your winter retreat.
I do want to add, though, that we will have a full class of works or a full schedule of workshops that run throughout the year with another fall gathering and then probably at least one workshop per month throughout the whole year. And that will also be soon on the website.
Okay. So when people look at that website, they'll see all the other good things that are coming up. Thank you again.
Thank you so much.
This has been Local Talk, where we explore the people, stories, and events of Central Iowa. I'm Kay Puttock, your host today, and I'd like to take this opportunity to thank all of you who have contributed to our recent fund drive. Your generous contributions make Local Talk and all our other shows possible. Today we heard from Rick Exner, Communications Coordinator of the Immigration Committee of AMOS, a Mid-Iowa organizing strategy. And also on the subject of immigration, we heard a brief clip from an old interview with Story County Sheriff Paul Fitzgerald. In the second half of our show, we heard from Claire Williams, the publisher at CASA, Creative Artists Studios of Ames, and also from Maureen Siemens of Legacy Learning, Boone River Valley. We also heard just a bit of When the Ship Comes In by Bob Dylan. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a radio show. If you'd like to join our team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878. That's 292-2878. Or contact us through our website, khoifm.org. If you enjoyed this show, tell your friends and check us out on Facebook. You can also listen to our show and all our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. You can find today's show on our homepage as soon as our webmaster, Ron Carson, is able to post it. KHOI also streams online at khoifm.org, where you can find archives of KHOI's shows. Please remember that you, as listener, are the most important part of Local Talk. Your participation as an audience and your generous contributions help make it all possible. Thank you for listening, and see you all again on the radio.